Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Thanks for tuning in, friends. I really appreciate it. Happy to have you here with me today. It's a muggy day. As I like to say, it's that long, slow death march to August. It's on. It's happening. Here we go. If we get, this is where we start to get into that time of year where a so-called cold front comes through and it's really not cold or even cool or even cooler for that matter. But we can hold out hope and there's always fall right around the corner. Again, happy to have you tuned in here. If you're listening on the radio, I appreciate it. If you are listening to the podcast, wherever you may be, outside of New Orleans or inside of New Orleans, happy to have you listening there too. Always fantastic to have you here. If you're interested in checking out the podcast, it is always available the next day after the show. So that would be Friday, usually early afternoon, thereabouts, by the time we get around to getting our act together and getting the show set up and all ready to go and distributed on the old podcast network interweb thing. And you can go to noladrinks.com or check out NOLA Drinks on Facebook to get that information, friends. So there you go. Wanted to talk about a couple things, just kicking off the show. Going on here the next couple days. We're kind of in that period, friends, where we still like Creole Tomato Festival's coming up. I got to pull up that date for you. I think that's in 2 weeks. And of course, we have Tales of the Cocktail, which is a spirits and bartender trade industry, goes on in the third week of July. And then we have Sachmo Fest in the middle of August. So, we do stuff year round around here, but we kind of start to slow down from that, six things going on every Saturday kind of thing. We're starting to gear down. Like I said, it's that long, slow death march to August when the weather gets hot and humid and sticky and nobody really wants to be outside or it takes some doing to be outside. But hey, there's always stuff going on. And tonight, for example, or this evening, I should say, the very last concert in the series for the spring, Jazz in the Park there at Armstrong Park, right there on 701 North Rampart Street, just outside the French Quarter. Last concert of the season. They've had about 7 or 8 shows, all very, very good ones. And they're closing out the season with John Cleary and the Absolute Monster Gentleman, who is fantastic, and Robin Barnes, who is excellent as well. That's a nice little lineup right there. I think the park's always open, but the things kind of kick off at 4 or 4:30. You have artists out there. You have vendors out there. I talk about this a lot. You got food trucks out there. And then I believe the music starts at 5:30. And you'll have Robin Barnes leading off and then John Cleary closing it out. And it ends at about 8:30. So you can go check that out. That should be pretty fun. Wanted to mention also, friends, this Saturday, there is the 2017 Summer Wine Festival, which is put on by the French American Chamber of Commerce. It's the Gulf Coast Chamber chapter there of the French American Chamber of Commerce. That is this Saturday, of course, June 3rd from 7 to 10 p.m. And it's called Vive le Vin, live the wine. There you go. Or, long live the wine is probably the best way to say it. And that's taking place at the shops at Canal Place, 333 Canal Street. It starts from 7 to 10. There's a VIP thing that kicks off at 6:30. And it's a lot of fun. There's going to be a lot of wineries. There's going to be a lot of food there. I think when I say wineries, I think it's going to be a lot of distributors. Pontchartrain Vineyards will be represented there. As a matter of fact, my lovely wife, Sylvia, and my lovely youngest stepdaughter, Kylie, will be there pouring wines on behalf of the winery. Some pretty good food folks, American Sector, Cafe Degas. I'm kind of skipping through the list here because, I don't like lists that much. Degas House, that sort of thing. Let's see, who else do we have? Nosh, the new restaurant by our good friend Mike Farrell. That's pretty cool. Reginalli is going to be there. There you go. Sweet and Sassy Noel. That'll be pretty fun. And then a whole host of wines, coffees. I'm guessing maybe a little bit of spirits and some stuff like that. So that should be pretty fun. You can buy tickets for, how much are those tickets? Let me get that for you. Here we go. It is, if you're a member of the chamber, it is $50. And if you are a non-member of the chamber, it is $65. And you can go to the chamber's website and it's just facc-gc.com. That's what I'm trying to say. Let me back up and say that again. facc-gc.com. So I'm going to go out on a limb here and assume that stands for French American Chamber of Commerce, Gulf Coast. facc-gc.com. See, I kind of pulled it together and you will find it there. Friends, we've got a pretty good show coming up for you here today. Happy to tell you that news as soon as I quit stumbling over myself. In the second hour, we're going to welcome our good buddy Liam Deegan, who is the co-proprietor of Barrel Proof, which is located on Magazine Street, 1100 block, I believe, what I like to call the lower Garden District, because if you were about a block and a half lower in the Garden District, you wouldn't be in the Garden District. You'd be in the CBD at that point. So it's a really cool bar. They have something like 270, 300 maybe whiskeys these days and a whole bunch of other stuff going on. But Liam has his finger on the pulse of a lot of things on the drink scene here in New Orleans and other stuff. We're going to talk a little bit about whiskey, I'm sure, because that's a lot of the foundation of that bar, what they have going on there, some trends in the drink business. We're going to talk about what some of their preparations are going to be involving. See, now that we're where we are in the season, if you're in sort of in the industry as it relates to drinks anyway, you start to gear up for Tales of the Cocktail, which goes on the third week of July, as I mentioned. We'll talk a little bit about what they got going on connected to that and some other things. One other thing that I do know that we're going to talk about is Negroni Week. And Negroni Week kicks off on, what's that going to be, Monday? Yeah, June 5th. It goes June 5th through June 11th. And, you know, as I always say as well, there's a month or a day or a week or whatever for everything these days. So go figure. Negroni has its own week. And of course, the Negroni is the classic Italian cocktail. I'll talk a little bit more about this because it relates to our weekly poll. So we're going to talk about the current weekly poll, which features the Negroni, and I'll get into that. And then we'll also talk about the results from last week's poll, which talks a little bit about tipping. But I'm sure Liam and I will also chat about Negroni. So we got that going on. And we're going to talk a little bit more too about a little bits of news and stuff like that in the drinks business, which should be pretty fun, drink and food business. And then we're going to also talk about, what else are we going to talk? The recent spate of restaurant closures going on here and just some thoughts on that. It is kind of the nature of the season, friends. But there's, you know, there's a little bit of debate for what the cause is or the underpinnings of why so many restaurants, including I think four that have closed in just the past couple days. And we'll talk a little bit about that. So there you go. What we're going to do here is we're going to take a little break on the NOLA Drink Show. And then we're going to come back and we're going to talk a little bit about some news in the drink business. We'll get into the poll and some other stuff. So friends, come on back.
A great big glass of wine. Give me a great big glass of wine. I'm gonna sit at the bar, cause the floor show starts at 9. Give me a great big glass of wine.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Well, after I'm through this bottle of wine, I'm gonna take you out, girl, and spend some time. If I do just one more round, I'm gonna take you out, darling, all the time. My baby
All right, everybody, welcome back to the Nola Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, a little Eric Lindell for you there. Friend of mine, good guy, and I think he actually, we're not super good friends. He used to be my neighbor over in Old Mandeville where we live, and currently, and I still live there, but I think he actually moved to like the panhandle of Florida, but he still plays around town, and always good to see. Got a great brand of sort of a mix of R&B in New Orleans and a little bit of folk, as you kind of heard there. And he's actually kind of also, aside from being my former neighbor, also was originally born and raised in Northern California, like I myself am. So there you go. There's a little trivia for you that nobody cares about. That's what I got. Friends, we're going to talk a little bit about our poll this week. And we're starting to do a weekly poll here on the Nola Drink Show, just so you know. And you can always get that on our website if you go to noladrinks.com. And I invite everybody to participate and answer. I try not to make the questions too specific to meaning, like, you know, if you're in the food and beverage industry, or if you're a big wine nerd, or these sorts of things, you know, if you have an opinion, I mean, if you kind of don't know, maybe you don't want to answer the question if you don't have an answer, but I try and provide some context in these things and sort of ask what people's opinions are of these different things. And one of the questions that I asked last week leading up to this week's show, so that's how we do it. We put a new poll out that I'll get to in a little bit on Thursdays, and it's open now, and I'll get to what that is. It's on the Negroni, as I mentioned earlier, but then we also talk a little bit about the previous week's poll, which came out last Thursday. Go figure. That's kind of how that works. I'm pretty on it, at least every 7 days apart. And the question that I asked last week, which I thought was very interesting, at least to me, and this is sort of a common debate that's gone on or continues to go on. If you go to a bar, or you go to a restaurant, whatever it may be, and I was trying to keep it sort of simple, but if you order a $25 pour of something, say a scotch or a whiskey, high-end rum, that sort of deal, so, you know, a shot or a pour that size of a drink, and it's $25, what do you tip? Well, a lot of people kind of come from the viewpoint that, hey, it doesn't matter if it's $25, you know, for this really nice scotch, and it's the same effort, if you will, if I order a $2, $3 shot of Jameson, Irish whiskey, right? And so, you know, they're saying, hey, look, it doesn't really matter what's in the bottle. It's the same amount of effort I came in, I ordered. So I'm just going to tip like $1, or I'm going to tip $2 per pour. Now, of course, the other side of the token would be that you should tip on a percent on the value. And it really is kind of an interesting question. And as I usually like to do, I'll tell you what some of the results are, interpret some of those, and then I'll kind of get into a little bit about what I think. But here were the results of the poll. And overwhelmingly, just shy of 62% of the respondents said that it should be 20% of the total. And, well, there you go. And some of the answers that I got, and I'm being kind of paraphrasing and combining some of them and things like that. But for one, that 20% is a standard for both food and drinks. You don't tip the same amount for all kinds of food. You shouldn't for drinks either, which I don't kind of get that response exactly. I guess what we're sort of talking about here, okay, I get it, that they're saying it is kind of the value. You don't tip the same flat amount if the bill varies, and you shouldn't for drinks either. And then also recommend that you tip after tax. 20% is the norm for great service was another answer. Somebody else said because it's the right and decent thing to do. And then several people actually said more or less, if you can afford luxury goods, you can also afford a proper tip. So I think that was pretty interesting. So again, just shy of 62% of the respondents said you should tip 20% of the total. Now, the next answer was $2 and just a flat. So here are the choices. Let me back up a little bit. 20% of the total. I said 10% of the total or 15% of the total. And then I said your choice is $1, $2, or $3+. Okay, just so we know what those choices were. And so again, 20%, 62, just shy of 62%. And then coming in as the second most chosen answer at a distant 14.3% was $2. So sort of that flat fee idea, like I talk about, maybe some compensation for the fact that it was a little more expensive. So say like something that's like a $2 or $3 shot, you tip $1. Okay, this is a $25 buck. I'm going to flip you another dollar. So that was $2. Coming in at just shy of 10% was $1. So that same kind of thinking. We got other was a choice, and most of that was right about 10% also. And that was sort of people basically kind of saying the same thing. It was sort of what applies here, what doesn't apply here. And I kind of didn't get it. Just shy of 5% said $3+. Okay, so somewhere in there. And then absolutely no one selected 10% or 15%. So if you went with the percent, every single respondent that answered the question said 20%. And then again, $2 was the next choice. And there was kind of, I mean, granted, just shy of 62% for 20% of the total. And then the next was just over 14%. So quite a difference. But those two camps kind of broke that way. It was a standard percent or the few people that actually really kind of does amount to, sorry, quick back and napkin math here, about 30% of the answers, give or take, a little bit more than that, 32% of the answers were a flat fee. So you see what I'm getting at here is it does kind of split across these lines of people arguing that you should tip, you know, either a percent and 20%, or you should tip a flat dollar amount because, again, sort of that effort thing that we were just talking about here a little bit ago. I think it's actually pretty interesting. Here's what I think, okay, and a couple things here on this thought, and I really appreciate everybody who always comments because that kind of gives me insight into their answers. And it, I will note this too, because some you can answer the polls anonymously, just so you know, if you go answer the poll, you can do it anonymously, or you can give me your name. And a lot of people that answer the poll are people that I know. And it was actually interesting because several people that I know that actually, you might say, okay, all the people in the service industry were the ones who said 20%. Right. Actually, that was not the case. I had quite a few people that work in the service industry who picked a flat amount. And actually, it was some of the higher flat amounts, maybe, but like $2. But they made that sort of point that it's, you know, I'm pouring you a shot, I'm pouring you a pour, and there you go. So I'm not really telling you what the right answer is, but I'll share a couple little tidbits here with you that I want to mention. One is that we talk about, you know, as I said, nobody picked 15 or 10%. If you picked a percent, you picked 20%. And back, you know, you go back a number of years and the idea was because, you know, and one of the respondents said that 20% is the standard for both food and drinks. Well, really, if you go back not too long into the distant past, the idea was that 15% tip was kind of the standard, and especially for food and drinks were viewed as a little bit differently. And 15% was sort of the norm for tipping on good service, like solid service, what you'd expect, people doing their job, doing it well, doing it right. And then if you tip more than 15%, like 20%, that was seen if you went above and beyond the call of duty or provided truly excellent service, top-notch type stuff. And then the idea is you might even say give 10% or less if somebody was subpar. So we have kind of migrated, I think, friends, into this world where 20% is the expected tip pretty much across the board on anything. And I'm not saying that that's good or that's bad. Here's my viewpoint on it. 2 points that might sound kind of a little bit different. Louisiana is a good example of this. And a lot of our friends that work in the service industry, and I want to make sure that people understand that, there is an exception made for the hourly wage, minimum hourly wage. And if you are a tipped employee, it's $2 and something cents that you get per hour. These people absolutely depend on getting tipped for their livelihood. So I do want to say that, that you know, tips are not really optional. This is how people make money, and they're expected to actually get tips. So if you're getting good service, if you're getting proper service or excellent service, you need to keep that in mind and you need to tip appropriately. And I would say, argue that in a certain sense, that's the percentage of the bill. Now, I will say this, that in my viewpoint too, is that especially if we're talking 20% of the total, if you are not providing good service, if you're not doing your job, I don't get paid if I don't do my job. So if you're not doing your job and this is all kind of an afterthought, then I would argue that 20% is excessive. You know, I mean, I'm not necessarily, I don't really ever stiff anybody. I don't think I've ever done that in my life, but I mean, I've flipped people some pretty bad tips when they have been absolutely horrible to me, like deliberately being a jerk and doing that sort of thing and deliberately giving poor service for one reason or another. Then I have given somebody a pretty poor tip. But to me, that becomes a gradation of the different levels of percent of tip that you would give. It, you know, and it's your prerogative, again, of course, but if they've given you very, very poor service, then you penalize them on the tip, I would say, based off a standard of what is now the case, 20%. I think that is sort of the reality. So there's that part of this. And again, I do want to again, remind people that in so many states, in Louisiana being one of them, that you are not making an hourly wage. And we always talk about there you are, but it's a very low one. You're not making the hourly wage that everybody else makes if you're working in a non-tip job. So this is part of their livelihood. And when we talk about people that are in the professional service industry, when we talk about people that are you know, professional bartenders, this is a trade, this is a profession, and these people are doing this for a career. And this is what they do, and not necessarily in all cases, but many of them are doing it for a career, and it is a profession. So we do need to understand that that's what this is. And to me, that's how you sort of judge people on this is, are they good pros? Are they doing their job? Do they take their trade seriously, their profession seriously, which the vast majority of them do, and you should tip accordingly. Now, what we'll talk about, we're going to take a little bit of a bottom of the hour break here because I'm going way on much longer on this than I intended to. But I want to come in and kind of give you some other thoughts then briefly to think about as it relates to the polls, the answers here and some things to think about when you tip people. And then we'll also talk about this week's poll on the Negroni. So friends, we're going to take the bottom of the hour break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you on WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Come on back.
For a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails, Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m. On Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. It's football and festival season, and there's no better way to enjoy Sazerac Rye than in a pothole cocktail. Just fill up a glass with ice and your favorite root beer, and add 2 ounces of Sazerac Rye for a truly tasty toddy. Named after the city's most iconic of inconveniences, the pothole is proof that New Orleans never takes itself too seriously. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucare. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's grand dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon dining room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Then you can understand just what I mean. Now all through the week it's quiet as a mouse, but on Saturday night they go from house to house. You don't have to pay the usual admission if you're a cook or a waiter or a good musician. So if you happen to be just passing by, stop in at the Saturday night fish fry. It was rockin'.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans. Thanks for tuning in today here on the radio in New Orleans, if that's where you be. And if you be somewhere else listening to the podcast, be it on Thursday or be it some other day down the road, I really appreciate it. As always, friends, right before we took the break, we were talking a little bit about the weekly poll from this past week and the amount that you would tip according to what you believe for a $25 pour or shot of a premium spirit. And I think I flogged that horse pretty well as far as what their answers were, but just kind of quickly reminding you just about anybody who answered, it was split into three choices of percent or three choices of a flat fee, and 62% of the people said 20% of the total, and nobody said 10 or 15%, but 62%, just shy of that, fell into that camp, and then about, we'll call it about 35 or so percent fell into the camp of, then there was another choice, but fell into the camp of a flat fee. We talked a little bit about what that meant, and I gave you some of my opinion on how it's important for the service industry to earn tips because their livelihood and profession depends on it. But we did talk a little bit, too, also about the idea that, you know, a lot of the answers I got within the why portion of the question, we're talking about the 20% is the standard. And I mentioned that it used to be 15% was the standard, and then 20 would be something that you would give for above and beyond the call of duty. And I think we've kind of migrated to that 20%. And again, I think it's also kind of the thinking, too, with drinks in particular, that the percent, the standard percent wasn't quite as high. But then I think you can also, and this part I didn't say, that the argument that, you know, if people are giving you a craft cocktail, for example, a lot of effort, a lot of artistry, a lot of presentation, then, you know, that's more akin to food, right? Because you're actually pairing something and putting something together. So something else to think about. Now, I will say this too, and this is where I wanted to go with this. So I kind of gave you my opinion on the idea of a percent tip and what that means before the break. So if you missed it, you can go back and catch that on the podcast. But here's kind of where I come down on this. And again, remember that the question was a $25 shot of a premium liquor. All right. We contrasted that with a $2 shot of Jameson or something like that and what that means. And you might argue, heck, you're just giving me a pour. What does it really matter if it's expensive scotch or if it's just Jameson Irish whiskey? Nothing against Jameson. This is where I kind of come down on this then. And this, there's an article that was actually published not too long ago, a month and a half ago, out of the Seattle Times. And this is where I actually got the idea of the poll. And sure, we talk about this a lot, but was kind of addressing this issue head on. And Seattle Times staff reporter, his name is Tan Vinh, wrote an article about the debate, basically, and kind of used a similar example, you know, and talking about if it's an $18 pour of whiskey versus an $18 cocktail, what does that mean? That sort of thing. And, you know, he was talking about a little bit about how people sort of come down on one side, a percent or a flat fee, as we've discussed. But he talked to a gentleman named Jim Meehan of PDT in the East Village. And I guess Meehan's a Portland resident. So I guess he's talking, I guess we're talking about Portland, Oregon. I apologize, not East Village in New York. And he answered, here are some things to think about on how I base my tip beyond just sort of a formula. And I'm just going to read some of these, even though, you know, I hate listicles. This isn't really a list. Good answers. If the bar was busy, was the bartender attentive or was it difficult to get the bartender's attention? Did the guest chat with the bartender or was the interaction solely transactional? If they chatted, did they appreciate the FaceTime or was it intrusive? Based on the interaction, do they like the bartender? This is subjective and unquantifiable, but important. Did they know what type of whiskey they wanted or did the bartender help them pick the perfect dram? If the bartender helped, was the suggestion well received? Was the pour generous, precise, or stingy? It's kind of a tough one, right? I mean, you're kind of precise pours are kind of what they are, right? Especially when you're running a bar, margins are thin, but fair enough. Was the glass clean? Okay. Did the bartender wait for the cube to temper or pour the whiskey on top too soon and it cracked if you were getting something like that with a cool cube on it? That's also a good question. So presentation. Was their spot at the bar kept clean during their experience? Was it clean when they arrived? If the bar was busy, did the bartender respect the sovereignty of their space? Or did the bartender serve between them or over their shoulder? sometimes that's a reality. But yes, you know, not just having people willy-nilly leaning over you in your space if you've been at the bar. Was the bartender entertaining other people, or was the bartender a dark, miserable black hole of a person sucking up all the energy in the room? Did they say thank you when they dropped the check? Did they make eye contact? Was the check presented clean? There you go. And, you know, you could go on and on and on and on. Now, that is kind of where I come down, friends. And that's where we were talking a little bit about the idea of tipping properly based on people doing a good job. And I am full in favor of the idea that you tip, you know, 20% even on a pour of whiskey like that. I do agree with the argument. If you can afford a $25 pour of whiskey or a premium spirit, you can afford a $5 tip, right, for 20%, I would think. But that to me becomes the criteria. How was the presentation? Did they guide you with knowledge? Did you maybe ask some questions saying, I want to try something new and here's kind of some of the things that I like, maybe some of the brands or something that I like? Did somebody steer me in that direction? Was there an environment in which this was all very interesting, presented well, entertaining, thoughtful, educational, all of these different things that we all might look for when we go into a place? And if I'm dropping 25 bucks on a pour, and especially if it's not something that I don't know what it is, and maybe I want to learn something, that to me, this person who is behind the bar is my tour guide. And I'm going to tip them accordingly based on the tour that I got. So I guess that's kind of ultimately my point there, friends. So here's our poll for the next week coming up. And if you'd like to answer, again, it is available on NOLADrinks.com or on our Facebook page, which is just facebook.com/NOLADrinks. And we're talking about the Negroni, friends. And the Negroni, of course, is a classic cocktail. It was invented in 1919 at Florence's Cafe Cassone, in Italy, of course. And it's basically what this drink is. And again, like I don't like to do is I don't want to color too much of the conversation about the poll. But the Negroni, in the classic sense, is equal pours, usually 1 ounce, could be 3/4 of an ounce, but typically 1 ounce of gin, 1 ounce of Campari, which is sort of a bitterish, of course, Italian liqueur. And there are varying trends or varying variations, on a theme there, Aperol, some of these other ones. And then sweet vermouth. So again, Campari, gin, sweet vermouth in equal proportions. Now, this is actually kind of a relatively easy canvas with which to play when you talk about making a drink. So there's huge variations on the theme. So you can imagine if the choice of gin and the choice of vermouth in the classic Negroni can make a big deal, make a big, big difference here. Some people maybe swap in, as I mentioned, Aperol or Peychaud's Aperitivo, for example, for Campari. Other people might swap in some different types of liqueurs, Sous, some of these gentian type liqueurs or quinine type liqueurs that are out there, these different things. So people tweak things. Now, one of the things that people also tweak is the base spirit, in this case, gin. And that's really where we find a lot of the quote unquote classic variations on the theme. So this week's poll question, friends, asked, you can't pick the Negroni because Negroni week's 5th through the 11th. I didn't want to make it that easy. And, you know, you might just say, why screw with a good thing? And I totally get that. But what the question is, what is your favorite variation of a Negroni? And there are a lot of them. So sort of some of the classic ones, and I'll hit on these. You'll see more on the poll, and I'll elaborate on what some of these choices are. But what people will do, as I mentioned, they'll swap in the base spirit. So for the gin, we'll still have Campari. We'll still have sweet vermouth. Probably the most famous one, arguably, is the Boulevardier. The Boulevardier, if I say that properly, I'm still stumbling all over myself here on the show. The Boulevardier cocktail, of course, friends, and that is where the gin is swapped out with whiskey or bourbon, really, I think, is a good choice there. And that's been around for quite some time, actually. Was first seen in print in 1927, so deemed itself as a classic cocktail. There is the Americano, and sort of the progenitor to the Negroni was the Milano Torino, so that was Campari with martini sweet vermouth. And then, as sort of the legend goes, it is said that American travelers preferred the aperitif with a little bit of soda water. So the idea of the Americano is the Milano Torino, and then adding soda water to make the Americano, and that's been around for a long time, so another common variation. There's the Contessa, which is a modern one. What this guy, it's kind of become a modern classic. It's John Gertson from Boston's drink, and it replaces two of the three ingredients. Campari is swapped for Aperol, which is a little lighter, a little more orangey, probably slightly less bitter, and dry vermouth instead of sweet vermouth, but still uses gin. There's also kind of famously the Negroni Spagliato. Oh, I actually didn't stumble over that one. And that's basically where instead of using gin, you use sparkling wine, of course. There's the Old Pal, which very similar to the Boulevardier, is basically instead of the gin, you're using rye whiskey. That's kind of a nice combination. And then lately, I think we've seen sort of three variations that have also become pretty popular. The Mezcal, or so-called Smoky Negroni. So you're using Mezcal, you get a nice smoky note. There's the Tequila Negroni, which some people have terribly called the, I can't even say this, the Agavone, which is agave and end of Negroni. There you go. Or the Tegroni. For tequila and Negroni. Yeah, we're not going to say that. We're going to say the tequila Negroni. And then there's the rum Negroni also. And with the mezcal and the tequila Negroni too, typically the Negroni is served with a orange bitter, well, in some cases orange bitters, but a twist of orange and an orange peel. And sometimes I think a nice choice on the mezcal Negroni or the tequila Negroni is actually a grapefruit, just a grapefruit or a touch, even grapefruit bitters is pretty nice there. So those are the choices more or less that I laid out. And then there's an other, if you want to tell us what your other favorite variation is. Now, let me say this, because when I say other, there are a gazillion variations, as I said, on the theme, even messing around with the standard formula of gin, Campari, and sweet vermouth on the Negroni. But there are all these different tweaks, swapping in things, blah, blah, blah. There's even a website called 100negronis.com. And that's the number 100negronis.com if you're interested. It's loaded with all kinds of variations, so we're obviously not going to list 100 things. And then there was also a really interesting article that I'll put up on the Facebook page that I really liked. This guy was talking about, it's from Olive Magazine, olivemagazine.com, and it's called Six Negroni Variations with Recipes from the Expert. And I don't know who the expert is. I'm sorry, I don't quite remember when I read the article, but his whole thing was six variations on the standard formula of the Negroni, just playing with what the aperitif was in it, playing with the type of gin, playing with the type of vermouth, and that sort of thing. So let us know what you think about your favorite variation of the Negroni as we come up on Negroni Week, kicking off Monday here, June 5th, runs through June 11th. I'm sure that a lot of the bars and stuff like that in town will be doing interesting things for Negroni Week, so be on the lookout for that. If I come across some good stuff, I'll put it up on the Facebook page. And hey, what we're going to do here, friends, is we're going to take the quarter of the hour, quarter till break, here on the NOLA Drink Show with Brian Diaz. We're going to come back, talk a little bit about drink news, and we're going to talk a little bit about restaurant business, and then Liam Deegan, our guest from Barrel Proof, should be here. Friends, come on back. Drinking that wine is dead alive. When they get drunk, they want to fuss and fight. Hooping and hollering and talk all night. When they get drunk, they begin to fight. Drinking wine for the old man. Drinking wine for the old man. Drinking wine for the old man. Pass that bottle to me.
Hey, ladies. Are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Baggio heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Finest girl you ever saw. She does some things against the law. She took my paw right from my paw.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans, or in the podcast global world. Yes, I like to say that. We were talking about that a couple of weeks ago. A lot of people listening in Japan these days, actually, believe it or not, and thank you. And I think there's even a couple of listeners, as we were talking about, in Namibia. That's correct, in Southwest Africa. And I was actually asked if I knew where it was, and I do. Never been there, but I do know where it is. So happy to tell anybody wherever you are listening to the NOLA Drink Show. Thanks so much for listening, and we appreciate it. Go check us out on all the social media stuff, too, and let us know what you want us to talk about. Of course, we don't just talk about, we talk about Namibia. We don't just talk about, you know, New Orleans. We talk about other stuff. Wanted to get to a couple things, friends. We're talking a little bit about this, and we'll get further into this. One of the topics that we talk about on the show quite a bit is restaurant closures and the restaurant scene business. And we kind of focus on the independent sit-down restaurants or small groups. You know, you might own 3 or 4 or 5 properties, but you're not like the chain thing, right? Like the cookie cutter chain thing. You might have 3 or 4 different things, but they're all different things. And, you know, it's a tough, tough business. We've had, as I mentioned at the top of the show, I think 4 restaurants close just in the past couple days. Oxalis closed 2 nights ago. Yesterday, I think, was their last day. Irish House, I believe, their last day was yesterday. Charcoals, although they're apparently reopening in a new location, as they said, with a smaller footprint later in the summer, closed. Nile Ethiopian restaurant in the Garden District also closed. It is a tough business. Margins are tough. We talk about this. Now, a lot of people have been talking about, is there a bubble? Has the bubble burst? Some people say that's absolutely ridiculous to kind of say that, where the idea is that there's really no bubble. A lot of these restaurants that people point out, for example, like we're talking about Charcoals closing. We talked about for example, Primitivo closed somewhat recently. The argument was made there by different people that the Aretha Castle Haley area, which is true, that neighborhood where there are some restaurants, Casa Borrega being one of them, a few others have closed, and that neighborhood hasn't really taken off. Lots of times there's personal issues involved with some of these places. For example, there's a restaurant over by us in Old Mandeville called Trey Yen that was a kind of a higher end Chinese place right off the causeway. They have been open for 46 years and they closed because no one in the family really wanted to take it over and operate it. But a lot of these things are, you know, people making these arguments that, no, there's not a bubble. It's just stuff that happens in the market. Margins are tough. You got a bad location. You got family fighting, blah, 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 blah. That's all, I think, kind of true. And I mean, there's a lot of really good points here. But I do think, and we talked about this, and I apologize for not remembering the dates, but we've hit this 3 or so times in recent months talking with different folks, restaurant owners, chef owners in the industry here about the competitive nature. Is the market saturated? Some of these things. And people kind of come down on different things. And I think we're actually kind of splitting hairs here. And here is why I think we're splitting hairs. You can argue that there's a bubble and it's burst. We have too many restaurants. There's not enough to support it. Or you can argue from the side of the coin that, you know, these places go out of business because somebody doesn't want to take it over, or because, again, tough location, or, you know, rent gets too high and these sorts of things. I do think that these things are kind of one and the same. And one of the analogies that I actually like to make is, and I use this in all kinds of things in life because I am really not that deep. I'm not a deep guy. I'm not a philosopher. But I always like to say you can use the analogy of too many kids in the pool. And I think we might have too many kids in the pool. I think we know that the population, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but we had a considerable decline in overall population in the area after Katrina. Now, obviously, after Katrina, and then things kind of recovered in a couple years, year or two, where the infrastructure was there, New Orleans was the hot thing, if you will, around the country and even really globally, where people wanted to come and visit. Now we're still a popular destination, and we should be, but I don't think that it's quite as maybe novel or quite as popular as it was. So we have a declined population. And I'm kind of talking the opposite side of the coin here. Too many kids in the pool, I'll get there. And then what we're, you know, maybe slightly fewer visitors. But what I mean by that is that all of these things that people are talking about, why some of these restaurants go out of business, tough location, tight overhead, which really has been the same. That number hasn't changed. Margins are always really, really thin. All these different things that people, you know, maybe you're not so good. Maybe the restaurant's not great. Maybe it's taking you a while to find your footing when you're open. And this is where I go with the too many kids in the pool analogy. If you have too many kids crowded in the swimming pool, a lot of them get out of the swimming pool for different reasons. If there's plenty of room in the swimming pool and everybody's having a good time, i.e. making money, then some of the problems in the swimming pool aren't quite as present. If there's lots of kids in the swimming pool, you might be playing in the shallow end when you want to be in the deep end because the big kids won't let you in the deep end. Okay? You know, the kid next to you might have peed in the pool. And so you want to get out of the pool because you can't stand the pee. But if you're having fun in the pool and you can get away from the pee, it's not so bad. So I'm sorry for the crass example, but what I'm talking about is some of these reasons that we're talking about, people are, I don't want to say making excuses, but talking about for why restaurants close, is sort of like why you get out of the pool when you don't like your gig in the pool anymore. And so I do think in a certain sense, there might be too many kids in the pool. Now, I do think that because in these conversations that we've had with people recently, we do see certain places that are closing. And I think when the summer is going to be tough, and that's another factor. We see places that might be closing coming up here that are good. Now, maybe the location is a little bit tough. Let's talk about the Bywater. Oxall is closed. They used to be there in the location were in the location where Prime used to be. They closed. Maurepas Foods closed. I know the reason given for Maurepas Foods was family considerations. The owner wanted to spend more time with his family. Booty's closed. Some of these other places in that little stretch in the Bywater. If everybody was there making money, I don't think it would be quite so easy as just to simply close. There are other solutions, right? You can buy your way out of a problem, as some people like to say. You can probably easily sell the restaurant as opposed to just closing the restaurant. All of that good stuff. So, you know, these things start to happen. I think when we get a little crowded, more people will go to you. Okay. But your choices, there are choices everywhere. They abound around you. And I think that there is some of that. And so where I'm going with this is that, yes, there are some of these reasons, but some of these reasons people are getting out, not because the restaurant was bad. It's extenuating circumstances. And that's where I get with too many kids in the pool. These are extenuating circumstances that get you out of the pool, not because you don't want to be in the pool. And the summer is a tough time. And I will add this, that another thing that comes up, and I think that's why a lot of these places close, of just trying to keep the ship together, keep the ship afloat while you're in the summer, can be really, really difficult because margins go down. You're still paying people. This is obviously when a lot of people actually, a lot of people that work for you will take a month off and go, go travel Europe or do whatever it is that they do. It's a tough time. And we know that tourism goes around year round in New Orleans. And I think that situation to a degree in recent years has improved. But the type of tourists very often that we get over the summer months are a little bit more budget oriented traveler and things like that. Regional travelers that are driving in car traveling and not necessarily the type of people that are going to patronize at least consistently throughout their stay here, independent sit down restaurants and some of the nicer bars and places that we're actually talking about here. So that's going to be tough. And I think it's going to be a tough summer, friends. I think we kind of see the writing on the wall. However you come down on the argument as to why, whether it's a bubble bursting or whether it's people are just getting out because it's too much for them to handle, they want to get out of the pool. I'm not going to tell you that, but I think it's going to be a tough summer. If you can, get out there and support your local restaurants. We depend on locals to keep a lot of these places open over the summer, actually. So there you go. There's a little take-home message for you. Friends, we're going to take the first hour break here on the NOLA Drink Show. We're going to be back in the second hour with Liam Deegan of Barrel Proof and maybe another little bit of news here and there. Friends, come on back.
Shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in the Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, this Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint. And it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
Tim McNally, welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to hour number two of the NOLA Drinks Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Happy to be here. Hey, friends, we're keeping our international agreements and our promises, and we're all here sipping on a Covefe cocktail as we speak. There you go. And during the break, we were talking a little bit about the scientific method. That's what we do. That's why we do the polls here. Critical thinking here on the NOLA Drinks Show. That's why we ask you and we get the numbers, empirical data. Man, it'll tell you a lot. There you go. Friends, Liam Deegan, our good buddy, is going to be here from Barrel Proof momentarily. He texted me a few minutes ago, maybe 15 minutes ago, and said he was leaving the French Quarter and on his way here. I'm assuming that means that he's probably walking, which is good for him. Get some air, get out there and do that. We're down here in the CBD on Carondelet Street. So that's right about a 15-minute walk, depending on where he is in the quarter. So I'm sure he'll walk in just about any minute. But one of the things that I actually wanted to get to, which I didn't get to, in some drink news, this report just came out. This was reported in the Drinks Business, good publication, really. They're kind of somewhat UK-focused, and I think they're based out of Hong Kong, actually. But they do a lot of global trend stuff and some things like that. And here's the news. The overall global drinks market shrunk by 1.3% in 2016. And that was quite a bit because the average rate in the previous 5 years has been 0.3%. So we're a whole percent higher. And a lot to unpack here, as you might imagine, and this article, of course, doesn't go into great detail. Now, it does not get down to the city level here in the article. I am sure here in New Orleans, we are doing our part to keep alcohol consumption up. I know each and every one of you that's listening in New Orleans does your part. Actually, I think you wouldn't listen into this show. So you're probably pulling the weight of three or four different people, really. And if you're listening to the podcast, I'm going to apply that to you too. So we thank you for helping buoy this up. But again, down alcohol consumption down 1.3% in 2016 compared to an average rate of 0.3% in previous 5 years. As I said, here's some things. By category, consumption of still wine dropped by 0.5% in 2016, and wine had generally enjoyed a pretty good expansion in recent years. But the sparkling wine market, which we've talked about on this show, and you may know, grew by 1.8%, and the vast majority of that was driven by Prosecco, which has become insanely popular. And yeah, there you go. Well, less expensive sparkling wine. Cider declined by 1.5% after years of solid growth. Now, cider is a pretty small percent of the overall segment of things. But, you know, the reverse of this was sort of blamed on declines in consumption in South African markets, and particularly here in the U.S., where volumes dropped by 15.2% in 2016. And this is after it had experienced double-digit growth for quite a while. So, you know, cider kind of, again, in a very small, small, small piece of the pie, grew quite a bit. And yeah, so there you go. Beer saw the biggest decline, with consumption dropping by 1.8% in 2016, compared with a five-year rate of minus 0.6%. The global trend there is a reflection on some of the largest markets, China, Brazil, and Russia, which saw steep declines in beer consumption in previous years, declining at minus 4.2%, minus 5.3%, and minus 7.8%, respectively. Global consumption of spirits painted a more positive picture. Slight growth, 0.3%. Vodka was blamed for dragging things down. However, the overall performance of that spirit declined by 4.3% last year. The decline in vodka was counteracted by healthy volume growth within gin, plus 3.7%, tequila, plus 5.2%, and whiskey, plus 1.7%. And the attribution to the negative decline in vodka is due to Russia. Go figure. They drink more vodka than anybody. Go figure. That dropped by 9.3%, which is quite a bit. As I said, we're pulling our weight here in New Orleans to keep the overall alcohol consumption up. Russia, what are you doing? You got to buoy up vodka. It's your thing. Which nevertheless, vodka is the largest market. Russia is their largest market by far. Key growth markets for total spirits last year were China, here in the U.S., and Mexico. Now, here's where I think we get a little bit funky. Despite overall decline of global alcohol consumption, the IWSR, that's the organization that put this out, noted that they predict that the trend will reverse in the next 5 years of overall decline, forecasting consumption to rise by 0.8% until 2021. And they didn't really give a lot of evidence for this. I'm not really sure where that might come from, but this will largely be driven by whiskey, as they said. And I'm going to segue really nicely in this. It's going to be driven by whiskey, which they predict to grow in volume by 650 million liters by 2021. Global consumption of mixed drinks is expected to increase by more than 400 million liters over the next 5 years, while sparkling wine is likely to add another 220 million liters. And they expect that beer growth should remain strong in many Asian and sub-Saharan African markets. So there you go, whiskey, keeping us going here. And here's my unnatural segue. Pleased to welcome my guest and an unexpected guest that has joined my guest, Liam Deegan, who is the co-proprietor there of Barrel Proof, a whiskey-driven bar, although you have a lot of other things going on.
Buddy. Oh, yeah.
So I don't want to pigeonhole you. I'm not trying to put you in a box. Good to see you, man.
Good to see you too, man. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. It's been a little while.
I know.
And Jillian White, who is also here.
How's it going?
Good, absolutely. And Jillian, wonderful. Thank you, Jillian. Good to see you. And it was actually funny because I was thinking, I knew he was coming. And Jillian runs the bar and beverage program over at Mobar there on Rampart. And they are partners in life. I'm going to say that. So I kind of get why. But I was thinking of you two guys because I knew Liam was coming. And then I was thinking, we have to do a show down the road with the two of you because one of the things that we've talked about individually, the three of us, is the importance of working in the service industry and then keeping a life balance. And you guys are both big proponents of that. And I was thinking, since you guys are a couple, work in the industry, kind of, you know, jobs that keep you away from each other and at hours that most of us humans don't work, getting out and doing stuff and doing other things is really important. And one of the things that I know you guys do is like it's called Krav Maga, right?
Krav Maga,
which is like a martial arts thing where basically you guys get the pleasure of kind of beating the crap out of each other.
Yeah, in a safer place than outside of a bar.
It's pretty nice. Exactly.
It's better for our neighbors too.
Yeah, right. And these are some of my favorite Facebook post friends. Hey, Rudy, there you go. Thank you, buddy. Kind of lost a little bit there. Rudy working the board as he does. Lost a little volume. Maybe that's what you all want. I lost volume. But yeah, so I mean, I'll get these really funny Facebook posts that you'll put like, I feel much better. Beat the crap out of him today, Jillian. Yeah. You say that quite a bit.
It's a safe place to beat each other up.
Yeah, absolutely. You're right up there in the microphone. There you go. Cool. Well, good to see both of y'all. And thanks for coming in. How you doing otherwise?
Doing pretty good otherwise. Just trying to beat the heat with some lighter whiskey that I brought in today, but
yeah, thank you, man. Actually, yeah, Suntory whiskey, very nice. We'll get into it. Did we offer you wine?
Because we'll get into it.
Okay,
we got some glasses. All right, we already filled them with whiskey though.
Awesome. Okay, now I'll get through the wine. We got a couple minutes here before we take a break, and then we're gonna get into that. Let me ask you guys this question, and I don't know if you saw this. Maybe Jillian, you might have even answered. So we're doing a weekly poll thing here, and the poll last week was on. Did you answer
the Vucare one?
That was the one before. Oh, so this one this week was and I just kind of picked a number, but if you got a $25 pour or shot, what should the tip be? And the choices were $1, $2, or $3+, or should it be 10, 15, or 20%? And kind of, you know, there's that sort of argument, well, it could be Jameson or it could be a premium spirit at 25 bucks. A shot's a shot, so I'm going to tip you $1 or $2. Or is it a percent based on the product or something else? What do you guys think? I'm just kind of curious.
You go first.
Oh, thanks. I would say that if you got a shot and you tipped $1 on something that was $25, I don't think that that's necessarily the appropriate way to handle things. I know that sometimes with a bottle of wine and you get the service and everything, 20% on like a multi-$100 bottle of wine can be excessive. But at the same time, I think it's pretty variable. Like, I wouldn't say 20% on a $25 shot necessarily is necessary, but it shows your appreciation and knowledge of the fact that, like, you're getting something of quality and you respect it is what you're getting. I don't know. I think a couple dollars less isn't going to be insulting per se, but
But like a buck.
But a dollar would be like, I think that that's kind of like you are showing at that point that like you're spending your money on something that you can afford to get, but you're not also factoring in the fact that there's somebody who is an expert on this and their livelihood is dependent on this. But if you're, you know, there are some things that are upward of like $50, and would I expect you to pay $10 on an ounce, 2 ounce pour of something? No, but if you pay more than what the expectation, which I guess like for a regular shot is, like that's anything that you add to is beneficial to me, and I appreciate.
And acknowledging the service.
Yeah, exactly.
What do you think, Liam?
I mean, I don't think a dollar is necessarily insulting. I think it's pretty par. Like people are going to tip a dollar on a $3 beer. Like that's obviously over tipping.
Right. Shot.
Right. But that's also that's way hot. Yeah.
By the numbers, that's over tipping, but that's kind of reasonable. So I don't think it's insulting to necessarily leave a dollar on a $25 shot. But at the same time, someone who's going to be buying a $25 shot, it's also contextually, like in most places, you're going to be buying a nicer pour. You're not at a nightclub buying like a Grey Goose.
Right.
And Red Bull, which may cost $25 either way. Right. But if you're buying something in a nice restaurant,
jeez, it does somewhere. Okay,
for sure. I'll take you to a couple places later on tonight.
Oh, great.
But I think in most places where you're getting a nice thing for $25, like it's either on your total dinner bill, which most people will tip 20%,
right?
Or you just it's probably someone who has money who should probably tip me. I think $5 is totally reasonable for a $25 pour, especially if it comes with like a little bit of extra or just, you know, if someone is a little nice to you or just talks you through it or explains why you're paying $25, that's worth a little bit extra tip. Because there's some people who just see an expensive whiskey or cognac or whatever and will just buy it just because for the price. But if someone's, you know, asking why they should pay outside their normal price range, like some people might want to splurge on a $25 pour of whiskey at Barrel Proof and they want to know why. So that might warrant like an extra little like service.
Right,
I guess.
I think it's interesting in some places also, like I know of some bars that do like they call it like a break even, and it's where they have a very exclusive or expensive product that they sell at their cost. And so for a lot of us, you look at that as an opportunity to taste something or try something that is regularly outside of our means, given what the markup normally is when you're in a restaurant or a bar. But I think it takes a certain type of a certain person who is looking for that thing, but also kind of knows what the appropriate follow-up to that is, where if something is, it costs $12 to the company, and then you know that like you compensate a certain amount.
Right.
Because you understand at that point that you're getting something at a deal, obviously a little bit different than just like regular marginal markup. But I think that sometimes one would hope if you're splurging on something that you have somewhat of a means to back it up, but that doesn't always happen.
Right.
Also,
right? You guys, and these are all, and you guys basically corroborated most of what I said, so I'm not going to repeat because everybody heard me babble about this earlier. Sort of my rationale behind my answer, or sort of set of answers, because I remained a little bit elusive. But anyway, there you go. We're going to take a little break here on the Noel Drink Show. We are chatting with Liam Deegan of Barrel Proof, Jillian White of Mobar. Hey, we're hanging out. We're going to come back and talk about whiskey. Friends, come on back.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Are you looking for a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails? Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event, or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Black had a son, Bobby Charles Cole Blue. Catholic church bells tolled the Louisiana blues.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you. Yeah, a little Gulfstream by my buddy Roddy Romero on the Hub City All-Stars. Roddy out there in Lafayette, Grammy nominated. Just got to see him play the other day. Pretty happy about that. He's a good dude. Sitting here chatting with a couple other good people, Liam Deegan from Barrel Proof and Jillian White from Mobar, my good friends. Jillian, special celebrity walk-on here on the show. Thanks for coming
You're
in.
So kind. That's
good. You're big time. You're over there. You're running the beverage program at Mobar.
Yep.
And, you know, you guys were kind of the family tree thing. You both got your start, Liam, a few years back working at, well, I shouldn't say start, but in the family tree, mm-hmm. working at Sylvain, mm-hmm. and you as well, Jillian, and yep. And then you opened Liam Barrel.
Thankfully at different times, though.
Thankfully at different times. Yeah, you guys never did overlap behind the bar there at Sylvain, did you?
That won't happen.
No. Then I've only seen love blossom from afar. But you opened Barrel Proof, Liam. Jeez, are we 3 years?
3 years. It was May 15th. So
yeah, awesome. Yeah,
earlier last month now, because it's June.
But congratulations, man.
Yeah. It was,
Mobar had its third birthday.
Like, doesn't
right
seem
after.
Like 3 years. But
did Mobar really?
Yeah.
Three.
Because Mobar opened right after Barrel Proof.
I wasn't here for that. But now, like in retrospect, like the ambitiousness of kind of opening up two spots in previously like very popular spots in town.
Right.
That was a huge thing to take over.
And same restaurant group like we're talking about here, opening two places on the heels of each other. It's mm-hmm. funny that you say that about Mobar, because I kind of would have guessed like, okay, I guess that makes sense. I would have guessed closer to 2 years. I didn't realize that they were right on that close on the heels of each other.
Yeah. We've had a lot working against us in the past few years, though.
Construction.
Right. Yeah. At Mobar on Rampart Street, but now things have opened up. Streetcar looks great. Things are going well. You got a little renovation inside the restaurant. I'm going to give props to my lovely wife who's sitting over there.
Of course. No, it's honestly one of the...
all in the family.
The best
thing. All in the family.
It's also been
it's
nice
to... to a show.
Yeah. Sorry, not going to disagree with you on that. No, I was going to say it's been really nice to have, you know, all of these moving parts work together, where Sylvie did such amazing work on the whole space. And that was about the time that I got over to Mobar, and then since then we've also had additional company on Rampart, which has really helped out in the whole development of the street, which has been fantastic, because for a while I feel like people, unless you were in the neighborhood, wasn't always the best place or the most desirable location to go to. But between like us and, you know, the new Effervescence and Black Penny and Tawny, it's been really great to have
more
such
on
good,
the way too.
Such just good neighbors. Yeah. And with more coming in. Yeah. That's really fantastic for us and everybody else. So we're happy to see what comes along.
One of the things when we talk about this on the show, and I don't want to go too far down this road because we're meant to talk about a bit of other stuff, but because this show, if you're listening on the radio, it's always on a Thursday. And during the spring and the fall, they do the Jazz in the Park there at Armstrong Park. And I was talking about the last one of the spring season being tonight. And it's really cool. You can like roll up the streetcar or roll down the streetcar, as I should say, depending on where you're coming from, most likely. And then go watch the music and then knock off, go get a drink at Tonico, see you guys get a drink, get a nice bite over at Mobar. And check it out. I mean, Rampart's become the destination that it should be. Mm-hmm. And it's such a historical place, too. And we figure Congo Square, the history of jazz music, dating all the way back to African-American history in New Orleans, part of the slave trade and a cultural component where people would go, African-Americans would go to celebrate their culture even during the slave era. During that time, so much of the music that we celebrate here in New Orleans stems from Congo Square at Armstrong Park. So it's a cool place to go explore. And especially a cool place, I think, to kind of go understand some of the history there, Cosmo Matassa, who is one of the preeminent producers and owned a studio right there that is now a laundromat just up the street from you at Mo Bar. But there's a plaque.
Yeah.
Well, you guys, what we were actually supposed to talk about on the show, not that I don't mind meandering, we meander on the
show
all the time.
To me. Yeah.
You know, actually, you all know this because you've both been on the show before. There's no, wherever it goes. I mean, hell, throw the notes out the window. I don't even have notes, so they don't, nothing to really go out the window. But we're talking a little bit about whiskey to a degree. One of the things we wanted to kind of talk about is, you know, summer drinks a little bit, and been hitting that past couple weeks. Weather is warm here. And Liam brought in a really nice whiskey that we're actually just drinking. I'm drinking neat right now. That's a nice kind of lighter whiskey.
Yeah, so... I brought in Suntory Toki. I mean, I kind of obligated to bring in a whiskey no matter what the weather.
Right. So I was
trying to think of something that was good for like 90 degree days with about 100% humidity. I think the best thing was, which is also a newer product for Louisiana at least, the Suntory Toki, which is a blended whiskey, which is not the most awesome whiskey by itself, I'll say. But I kind of think of it as like the Japanese Cutty Sark. It's not, you know, not the best straight pour, but in with soda water and a highball, it's like it really is pretty great. So this is it's pretty much what it was intended to be. So I brought some cold soda water
Yeah,
the two things aren't as cold as they should be. They should both be like the whiskey should be kept in the freezer ideally, and the soda water should be a little bit colder. But it doesn't even need ice usually. Traditionally, it doesn't necessarily have ice. But it's whiskey and soda isn't the first thing people think of in the spring or summer. You know, usually it's like margaritas or whatnot. But
you guys, we're gonna take a little bottom of the hour break. This is one of those ones that we actually have to take. So we're gonna come back to the highball here, and we're gonna talk a little bit more about whiskey. Talk a little bit more with Liam and Jillian about summer drinks and other things. Who knows what we're gonna talk about? Friends, come on back to the NOLA Drink Show.
This is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
This is Christopher Icaza, general manager of Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street in the beautiful Vaucouleurs. We encourage you to come join us this fall and experience the renovation of one of the French Quarter's Grand Dames. Join us in our beautifully renovated Napoleon Dining Room. Come see our friend Paul Gustings at the beautiful Empire Bar. Experience one of the French Quarter's loveliest courtyards. That's Broussard's Restaurant, 819 Conti Street. Open 7 nights a week and every Sunday for brunch.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region. Producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood. Or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to over-oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc, a great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
The French Market offers daily entertainment and delicious food and drink options throughout our 6-block district. Whether you crave raw oysters or fresh produce, authentic confections or healthy daiquiris, you can find it here. Sit at one of our cafes and hear live local music. Enjoy a muffaletta, po' boy, salad, or cheese plate in the farmer's market. Check out our pop-up farmer's markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays for even more fresh food options. History is being made fresh daily at the French Market. Visit frenchmarket.org for food, drink, retail, and event listings.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
That's the sweet touch of love. Oh, when just the drop of a name begins to sting your very toes. That's the sweet touch of love. Oh, yes, it is. The thought of not seeing you would blow my mind. Oh, that's sweet touch of love.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in the podcast interwebs wherever you may be. Hey, we're chatting with our good friends Liam Deegan of Barrel Proof and Jillian White of Mobar, and we were talking a little bit about Suntory Whiskey Toki, and then we were sort of getting to this point here of talking about the whiskey highball being a nice sort of warmer weather whiskey drink if you're a whiskey person. Way to pull a header there on the microphone, Jillian, no problem. You okay?
Fine.
Okay, good.
Totally good.
Nice way to pull it back together. Good stuff. No concussion here. No laceration. We're good. And we're talking, you know, a little bit about that. One more highball. We will see what happens after the next commercial break. But you know, the whiskey, Suntory Whiskey Toki being very nice. And then the highball being, as you were saying, Liam, during the break, a nice lighter drink. But then we kind of started to go, which I want to do. Let's go down the rabbit hole here of the geekiness of, let's talk about the highball. Let's talk about, you know, choice of whiskey and choice of soda water.
Yeah, so first of all, I mean, the highball is a great warm weather cocktail, you know, an alternative to other popular citrus drinks. It's really easy to make at home anywhere. I think it's really refreshing, but it's one of those things that nowadays is gaining popularity with Japanese whiskey and people kind of trying to simplify things. However, a lot of people in the bartending community have a gift of making even the most simple things extremely complicated, but with good result. You know, we were talking about when Jillian and I went to Texas. I've always been fascinated with Japanese whiskey and just the Japanese bar culture. They kind of do things really extremely well, and so her and I went a year or two ago to Anvil in Houston. I think it was the first time we had this whiskey, and they did a highball, which is a really super traditional highball where the whiskey's kept in the freezer. The soda water that you use is kept very cold, and there's no ice in it. Mm-hmm. It's a 2-to-1 ratio of water to whiskey. And
so 2 water, 1 whiskey.
2 water, 1 whiskey, yeah. So 2 ounces. 2 ounces of whiskey, typically 4 ounces of water. A little more if you prefer. It's stirred 13 and a half times. And then
that half stir is tough. Huh? That's you like, put that's the brakes on.
It's always the same as like the Japanese tea ceremony. They've kind of applied right. That to the highball. They do everything to
precision
and excellence. You know, except for making cars.
oh, side comment. All right,
but in Texas it's become this cult thing, especially since they love Topo Chico. the one place they don't like Topo Chico is in their highballs. And there's a funny article online about
it. And tell people what
it.
Topo Chico is, just so they know.
It's a Mexican origin water, mineral water, high salt content, extremely aggressively carbonated, big bubbles, which is nice for everything else, especially for our bar. We don't use a soda gun, and it never goes flat.
You're welcome.
It was by suggestion of her, because we used to use a soda siphon, which those things do not
work.
Oh,
okay. And you said
suffered a minor concussion here, but also my judgment's usually really good.
recovered even nicer. You remembered why.
So, yeah.
So the one thing Topo Chico is not good for is kind of, it's overpowered. It's good for like vodka sodas, whatever. It stays carbonated all night. If you open a bottle at the beginning of the shift, it'll be carbonated at the end of the shift.
All right. Okay.
But for a highball, you want it to be a little more delicate, a little more about the whiskey. You want just a little bit of liveliness from the bubbles and just a little bit of dilution from the water. So they actually, I think Anvil did a taste test of maybe 20 something sparkling waters, and Mountain Valley was the winner. So I mean, I brought Canada Dry, which is not as small of bubbles, but it's way more neutral than Topo Chico, and it makes for a, there really is a difference. It sounds silly to talk about,
true.
You know, it's like talking about bitters or something like that. Well, it gets a little, like it's a very deep rabbit hole, but I think
really,
in the end, it makes a difference.
Thing, yeah.
Go ahead, Jillian. Where are you?
Well, I was gonna say it's you're really like focusing on something very specific. And at first, when I was, you know, when we were speaking with Bobby, who is one of the guys who runs Anvil, we had like driven the hurricane to get to Houston, and we were like super excited about this. And at that point in time, I didn't know what to expect, and he gave us a full rundown on the whole, you know, just like trying to figure out how they were going to make this whole kind of event work. And it was really interesting because in my mind, I wouldn't have thought that the soda water was going to be the variable. I thought maybe like the whiskey would be the variable object that they were trying to focus on. And so they knew that they wanted to, I mean, obviously within like Japanese whiskey, there's only a certain amount of options that you have. But where they focused on this, the real star of the show in a very like odd sense was the soda water,
right?
That, you know, either could have, like Liam was saying, if it was Topo Chico, it would just completely, it can kind of like blow your palate out because it's super like mineral forward and very carbonated, which is really refreshing and good in certain contexts. But when you're trying to make a perfect pairing of things, even as simple as like mixing whiskey with soda, you have to factor in like the subtle nuances of the whiskey and what soda water is involved.
Two
and it sounds,
right?
Really ridiculous,
no,
but it makes
all,
a lot,
right?
Of,
I mean,
sense,
it does,
in,
right?
Retrospect, like,
sure.
Now.
Sure, we're talking about two ingredients, right?
Right.
So, I mean,
yeah.
These two ingredients are, that's all you got.
Right.
Right. I was kind of joke about like the arguments over minutia that bartenders get in. But really, the simpler the drink, the easier it is to mess it up.
That's why
so
I feel like
a bad soda water, it's just not gonna be the same. I mean, it's still gonna be good. It's still got whiskey and it's still gonna be fun to drink. But it really is interesting how.
But it's the same thing. Like when people talk about getting, right, a martini, I think honestly a martini is one of the easiest drinks to mess up because there's,
right,
so many preferences, variables, things that, you know, what dry. Right, like, you know, classic, whatever, that people have all of these different word associations to things that they expect it to be. And it's, unless you actually like hone in on what those things are, there's so much room to mess it up.
Right.
And that happens 90% of the time. Like, so many people order those drinks and you're like, how specific can I be with you? I want to give you what you want, but it's like,
you have to intuit what it is that they're talking about, what they think they,
yeah,
know,
absolutely,
the terminology they throw around, dry martini not really having anything to do with vermouth, right?
Right? And you're so, like, oh, vodka stirred? Okay, great.
Yeah, right. You know, I think one of the drinks that we talk about here too, and I kind of, whatever, we don't have to go down this rabbit hole either, but like the Sazerac's a good example of another drink that, to me, there's room for play, mm-hmm, but there's a narrow set of parameters to me before what you start making is no longer a Sazerac.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, on paper, that's also a really simple cocktail.
Right.
There's several places within walking distance that you can find a pretty messed up Sazerac.
Very.
Yeah.
we never name names in a negative way here.
There's
absolutely
always that argument of Angostura in a Sazerac too. So
yeah,
and I mean, and then there's even which I kind of don't mind sometimes, the combination where you use a little Angostura and you use a little Peixot. I think that's kind of a nice little thing there.
I'm on your side.
Yeah, there you go. That was, and you know, we're talking about, and I want to get back to this in a second too, but on the Vieux Carré. That was the poll 2 weeks ago. So we were talking about the Vieux Carré Upper on the Rocks was the poll question. We don't have to go down that road. Yeah. But the choice of bitters, right? The classic recipe generally is accepted as two dashes of Peychaud and two dashes of Angostura bitters. And then there's like, you know, people that try and like, you know, Dale DeGroff, if you go look at his recipe, it's just his branded bitters because it says that covers both bases. All right. Well, I'm not going down that rabbit hole.
He's got to get paid, man.
He's got to get paid. Right. Exactly. You know, picking the brand.
And they're not bad bitters. It's just there's...
There's
preferential treatment for these things. In tradition. Yeah, exactly.
In tradition, you know, tradition's a funny thing. And then, you know, sometimes things can be contemporized in a positive way. And sometimes it's like, don't mess. If it ain't broke, don't fix it.
Right.
Kind of thing. Well, with the highball, I mean, this is Anvil, where you guys were at in Houston that were doing this. So they were using this whiskey that we're having, the Suntory Whiskey Toki.
Yeah, I think it was one of the earlier times when the whiskey was available, at least in Texas. It just came to Louisiana maybe a month ago. So it's new for us, but it's been around the States for a little while.
Do you guys know what the retail price point is on this bottle, ballpark?
It's not crazy expensive. It's under $30, I'm pretty sure.
Okay.
Probably right around $30.
For a lot of Japanese whiskeys, I mean, that's pretty reasonable because a lot of them are very excessive.
It is allocated throughout the state, though.
Allocated throughout the state of Louisiana? Yeah. Okay. That makes sense.
most fine liquor retailers will have it, though.
Well done. And we won't mention any names because we don't know who they are and they're not the sponsor of the show. So go call them and ask if they have Suntory Whiskey Toki. Here's what's going to happen, you guys. We're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show, and then we're going to come back and chat a little bit more with Liam and Jillian. Sorry, I'm going to reverse the M and the N.
Brangelina.
You say it three times fast. Yeah. All right. Come on back to the NOLA Drink Show.
I say a little prayer and drink up and thank the Lord for driving me home once more. There's an open Bible on the table.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bars, sips, and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
Who drank my beer while I was in the rear? Tell me, who drank my beer while I was in the rear?
All right, everybody. Welcome back to the NOLA Drink Show. Brian Deese here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and on the podcast world. Thanks for tuning in. Hey, we're wrapping it up for the week and we're chatting with our good friends. I'm going to say this right. Liam Deegan. Liam ends with an M, as in Mary. And Jillian White. And Jillian ends with an N, as in Nancy. Yeah, there you go. It's the end of the show. And we're drinking whiskey.
Jillian Anderson.
Thanks for being here, you guys. I appreciate it. And we're talking a little bit about highballs. Let's talk about this. Just a couple things coming up. Do we touch on this? Sort of with the poll. But we do have Negroni Week coming up June 5th, so Monday, through next Sunday, the 11th. And Negroni, classic drink. And lots of variations on a theme there. Do you guys have a preference? This is this week's poll question. So I took the Negroni off the table.
Upper on the Rock?
Uh-huh. No, So that I almost thought about throwing that in. It's funny you say this, man. I almost thought about throwing that in as a bonus question. I was going to word it as a very leading question, as any bad poll maker would do. Is there any circumstances under which the Negroni should not be served on the rocks? And that's exactly how I was going
to
word it. And I decided not.
To the SAT.
I've had a lot of
exactly. I feel it's like a triple negative.
Yeah. Oh God, I know. But I've had people. I feel like a Negroni when you want it up, people know to ask for it that way. Like, we get that pretty frequently, but they right. know the traditional sense of in which it's served, so they specify. They're not like, can I get a Negroni? You give it to them on the rocks, and they're like, this is insane. I want it up. You know, like, I think people know the like what they're getting delivered, and then they know how to order properly at
right.
that point.
Right.
Hopefully.
You know, that's one of those drinks. Like, if you're going to go to me, especially with like a standard, so like a very standard Negroni, we're going to talk about equal parts, as we said at the beginning of the show, it's equal parts gin, sweet vermouth, and Campari. Now, if we're going to go with those ingredients, and I'm going to kind of assume like a Weller Call gin, which is probably going to be juniper heavy. And then if I'm going to go with a vermouth, which kind of similar circumstances, a go-to like, you know, whatever, Martini and Rossi or Cinzano or one of those, I don't even know. I could not drink that up. And no, it's just way too thick, way too soupy, and way too medicinal for me at that point.
I don't think it should be served up. And also, I mean, her and I have gotten in lengthy, extremely boring to everyone else, I'm sure, arguments over, especially about the Negroni as far as ratios and ingredients. I mean, I'm always kind of the traditional old school style of all drinks, really. But I think a Negroni should be just like London Dry, equal parts, and then as classic, like I think Torino. Cookie Torino,
yeah.
And then Campari. I mean, I there's plenty of other good drinks out there that are almost identical, but I think if you're going to get a Negroni, it should be classic.
Well, and that's something interesting that I think right there, too, because the vermouth choice to me, right, Cookie Torino, that's going to be like or Dolan Rouge or Carpino Antico.
Or Punta Mezza. I mean, those are all great.
Right.
But once people start throwing in like Americano or like Blanc vermouth or whatnot, it's still Negroni architecture,
right?
It's not a Negroni,
right
but we've also discussed the difference in the I come from the same mindset where like if you order a Negroni, you get a London Dry gin, a very like medium-bodied vermouth, and Campari. I know some people that prefer like different aperitivo style,
so things, they
like
want Cappelletti
or you know right, and yeah and then which like lends itself into a whole other world of classics. And then also there's different styles of gin. And the thing that prompted this was the fact that I used a gin in a cocktail that was it was the St. George dry rye gin. And we discussed the fact that I started to kind of play around with the measurements between that because the dry rye gin lended certain different qualities to it. And he was like, you can't have a Negroni. That's not one. But I like the conversation that gets to be had from that kind of thing because there's a lot that stems from what is classic versus what makes something the certain drink that it is, and also like how you can create a new drink. Like a lot of people will order things as like a mezcal or tequila Negroni, and that is okay with some people and not okay with others. But there's a lot of history and different kind of variables that kind of play into that, and I think it just comes from your preference, I guess.
Yeah, you know, I was talking about this at the beginning of the show because I just gave six or seven choices for the poll because you know you have to keep this kind of simple, right? And I mean, then I was saying that there's actually a website out there called 100negronis.com. Right. And then there's other stuff too where like you were saying, Jillian, I think
like Boulevardier.
I kept it very simple. So it was Boulevardier, Old Pal, Spagliato, Mezcal. I did say tequila, which you know they haven't gotten their own names yet, right? So it's Mezcal Negroni because you got nothing else to call it. Some people have apparently tried to call the tequila Negroni the Tegroni or the Agavoni.
Oh,
for agave, which I can't even say. Which is
someone
just
asked me about the deal.
Or rum Negroni, right? So, I mean, I just kind of kept it sort of simple. And then there was an other where you could say why. Now, like, for example, I do like the variation. So this is why hence the question on variation, not the classic. And I didn't want to split. You could split hairs on preferences within the classic framework. But, you know, your favorite variation where essentially what you were doing is swapping out the base spirit was generally the idea here with maybe one or two exceptions. But, I mean, like, I like the Mezcal. I like a Mezcal Negroni, but then, you know, you could split hairs too. What's the better twist? Is it the better... to me, I actually like grapefruit because mezcal and grapefruit are a nice combo.
Right. Yeah, so I think all those drinks would be more appropriate. If you're going to get really technical about it, I think it would be more appropriate just to say Negroni style. Like, it's not a Negroni.
Yeah.
The same way, you know, margarita is not a margarita if it has gin.
Right.
Style.
But right. sometimes as right. the consumer, right. it's easier to convey right. that kind of point with being, it's a more direct point to convey without sounding like there's a
yeah, as far as communication
there's a line goes, that you try yeah. to line that you try to tread with you being a consumer and your bartender being the expert, where you don't want to put something in a context of being like, well, I know more, so yeah. like let yes. me ask you for this thing that might stump you, but you're asking for it in a very approachable way that also like might not have the names, like you're saying about the tequila and the mezcal Negroni, they don't have actual classic names to associate with, but they're very commonly called for drinks. And I don't think there's anything wrong with ordering those, but it also has to do with just, you know, people understanding what it is that they're going to get, but also like you just, I don't know. It's a good variation that doesn't mean that you have to necessarily go with a classic thing because it's the classic.
It's still a good drink, right? Right. What you want. So it's a framework.
Just because it doesn't have
language.
Like a name, it doesn't mean that you shouldn't get
right.
it.
Right. And I think with some of the names too, and I'm totally speculating here. So somebody like a Dale DeGroff or Wondrich, or these guys will probably punch me in the face because they'll know more. But you know, like the Boulevardier or some of these, you know, when you go back to the early 20th century, late 19th century, there were less things to play with, right? So, I mean, swapping in bourbon or whiskey in a Negroni in a given bar in the United States.
Like you can get away with that
for
now.
Gin. Yeah, right. It's going to be given a name, right? Because it was new. I'm going to swap that base beer and I'm going to call it the Boulevardier. Right. Whereas now it's sort of like, now we're just kind of getting cute on the internet where people do hashtag, what should I call a Mezcal Negroni, you
right.
know, or Smoky Negroni, which I've seen. And then, you know, or Agavoni for tequila or Tegroni.
That's a good grown.
But if you
grown.
Exactly. But the good, news is June 5th through 12th, no matter what you call it,
it's
no matter what it is,
week.
We'll be donating money to any of those drinks.
Yeah.
But Mezcal in it, still donating money.
Yeah, so it's really, because we got about 1 minute left, so let's do it. Who are you donating money to? How does that work?
New Orleans Musicians Clinic. Any Negroni-style cocktail. Anything. Negroni,
so if you
Mezcal,
order
Negroni,
within
Boulevard
the framework.
If it has compartments with vermouth, even if it's not equal parts, we're giving money away.
If we're working within the larger Negroni framework to the Louisiana Musicians Clinic, which is a great organization that supports healthcare and things like that for local New Orleans musicians.
We'll be very loose with our definition of Negroni for that week.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
No other week.
No other week. Just June 5th through the 11th. Otherwise, you're going to get punched in the face. Dale DeGroff or Wondrich is going to come looking for you. Jillian, do me a favor. Tell people where they can find you at Mobar, on the street and online, as I like to say.
942 North Rampart. That's where you can find us.
Cool. And what about website?
Mobar.com.
Mobar.com.
Yep. We're at Facebook / Mobar NOLA. And our Instagram is Mobar. So you can find us there. And we are open 7 days a week.
Cool. MEAUX, by the way, because we're kind of doing that New Orleans thing.
Yeah.
Liam, where can people find you?
Aaron Rose usually
was there today.
Bowerproof is at 1201 Magazine. It's bowerproofnola.com, and it's bowerproofnola on all other social media platforms.
Awesome. In the lower Garden District, down in the LLG is where you can find Barrel Proof. Friends, thanks for tuning into the NOLA Drink Show. We'll be back next week. We're going to be chatting with the guys from Los Poboycitos, a fantastic band here in New Orleans. And until then, cheers, y'all.